Well, you may wonder what I'm doing here today. And I was very close to not being here today, and I want to thank Doug for being willing to read my sermon manuscript. A couple of things swayed me. One was that the sermon manuscript about Once in a Blue Moon, which is really about February 29th, and how we measure and count and experience time, just seemed so appropriate to what was going on in my mind and in my heart. And a little encouragement from Marlies that one needs to be with the community one loves and feels loved by. And the flowers that you sent were an inspiration and a reminder. And the deal closer, again, I don't want anyone to take things too religiously here, I'm not forgetting where we are, was in the UU World yesterday, and it was from the Reverend Howard Thurman, one of the great, great ministers up in the Bay Area, African-American, who was the minister of the Church of the Fellowship of All Peoples, and was a remarkable human being, and he wrote, back in the 1950s, so it is gender-specific, so please forgive him. Every man wants to know that however vast and impersonal all life about him may seem, however hard may be the stretch of road on which he is journeying, he is not alone, but the object of another's concern and caring. He wants to know this in an awareness sufficient to hold him against the ultimate fear and panic. It is precisely at this point of awareness that life becomes personal and the individual a person, and the way is cleared for him to experience his own spirit. I was not expecting the call that came on Wednesday morning from my brother, any more than you cannot be expecting a call about a 91-year-old human being. Every time the phone rings, there's an expectation and there's an unspoken sigh of relief when that expectation is not met, but inevitably it is. I was dressed and ready to go up and teach a class and to show you the clarity of thinking that one has under stress, my brother called and said, "Mom just had a massive hemorrhage. It doesn't look good. The paramedics have taken her to the hospital." And I said, "Well, I'm going up to the university. Call me on the cell phone and let me know what's going on." And I hung up, and I took about two steps and then said, "Yeah, you're going to teach a class. Yeah, you're going to concentrate and work out of the moment with some sense of authenticity." And so I sat down and started to cry because I knew what that meant and what it would mean. I knew that I didn't want to be alone. And I called my wife, and she was not as clear as I was what the event was. I said, "I need you. You need to come home." And we booked a plane immediately to San Francisco and got there, got off the plane, grabbed a rental car, got to the hospital in Marin as quickly as possible, and it was very clear that all of my mother's cerebral functions were gone, that she was gone, and that her body would follow shortly. And we were all very clear that was fine. There was no one that wanted to prolong the dying of her body because that which was Mom was already gone. I saw the CAT scan, and there was nothing left except autonomic nervous system. But that doesn't stop you from shaking and crying and holding her hand and talking to her even when you don't believe. You still sometimes do, and you trust the instincts of what is being said to your heart. We spent about 6-8 hours talking, crying, laughing, remembering, and I'm not going to turn this into a memorial service for her. And went home, and I fully expected that she would not survive the night, but she did. And when we got to the hospital at 11:30, held her hand, and her breathing had gone from 24 to 12 to 8, and we held her hand as she ceased breathing. Very peacefully, very undramatically, nothing like anyone ever sees in the movies. It was inspiring in a lot of ways, and how peaceful the transition from life to non-life was for her, leaving us, of course, with sadness and with tears, but not with regret. 91 is not bad. For those of you who saw the funeral notice, you'll see in Parents, Hilda Dober Weiss, 91, but didn't look it. That she would have wanted. She also would have wanted, and please forgive me because it's a political statement, she also would have wanted, but I was counseled against it, putting in, however, the cantor who's going to be doing the gravesite is going to use it. She loved all of humanity with the exception of a Nixon and a couple of Bushes. She was a liberal, democratic activist, a member of the old CDC, and a national committee woman, and fiercely dedicated to political vision and egalitarianism. Tremendous sense of humor, love of words, and love of people. And my brother and I are very grateful for the life that she gave us and the life that she gave us. And she's an ongoing inspiration. And since this sermon is about time, the thing that I felt so good about, and the first thing that I said to my brother when I saw him and we threw our arms around each other and hugged and cried, was I thanked him for having gone away 2 weeks ago on vacation to Mexico, because it gave me the opportunity to be with my mother for a week. And it's the first time that I lived with her since I was 13 years old. And I cooked, and we talked, and we talked politics, and she read the paper, and she watched the cable chat shows, and she yelled at the people when it was appropriate to yell at them. And I got to entertain my old philosophy professor from Vienna and his wife, who retired nearby, and it was Mom's last show. She got dressed, she got painted, well, she got painted and dressed every day, but she got extra painted on that night, and she held court and held her own politically and philosophically, and I have to confess to you that both my philosophy teacher and my mother were somewhat to the left of me in the conversation, and I was the odd man out, and it was... She was completely there until the end and then went fast, and what an extraordinary blessing and grace. But I was so grateful for the opportunity, that gift of time, to be with her. The sermon was about the 29th and just what that means to us, this crazy leap year, what it is that we, how do we number our days? How do we count the days? And we all notice that it is the 29th, that it's this odd day that happens approximately once every 4 years. It skips every once in a while because our universe isn't perfect, just like us. Just like us as human beings, as parents and as children, it's not perfect, but we want it to be. We want it to come out even. And that moon, that crazy lunatic moon, just doesn't come out even. We know that there are 12 months, and there are 12 months because there are approximately 12 lunar cycles, which is incidentally why there are 12 signs of the zodiac, why there are 12 sons of Jacob, why there are 12 apostles, all because of these lunar cycles that bring us back to the place where we start. But it doesn't turn out even. There's a period of new moon when the moon seems to disappear for 3 days. And that's why Jonah is 3 days in the belly of the beast. Lazarus is 3 days in the tomb. Jesus is 3 days in the tomb. That disappearance. We are all lunatics. We all look at the moon, and the moon taught us how to think, how to calculate, how to number. It was in looking at those lunar cycles as it waxed, as it waned, that we started to count time, to discern patterns and order in existence. We explained it in magical and mysterious ways, but it taught us to count. It taught us to number. It taught us to guess at the seasons, when to plant, when to plan on harvesting, when the rains would come, when the floods would come. And the heavens taught us in a very real way how to be human beings and how to be thinkers. Taught us math. Taught us even more than math. And we had a sense of rhythm, a sense of order in creation. We looked at creation, our early ancestors, who were no dumber than we, and said, you know, there are all of these patterns. They must mean something. Pythagoras looked at how he ever came up with a squared plus b squared equals c squared. I will never know how many times he had to calculate in order to find out, or why he wanted to find out, the hypotenuse of a triangle. I'm sure it had something to do with building. They looked at the patterns and wanted them to be even. And then they saw pi. 3 point, da, 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 that went on forever, and they said, oh, this is terrible. Shouldn't it come out even? Shouldn't pi just be 3, never mind this 0.1457913, on to infinity? How can it be infinite? How can the months not be perfect? Why aren't they in 12s? Why do they all have different numbers? Can't we make the math right? Well, we look at lunar cycles and we get 12s. We look at ourselves and we are on base 10 for the most part. And it's very hard to reconcile those systems. And it seems to be both order and incompleteness and imperfection in creation. Early theologians and scientists, and there really wasn't much difference between them in the beginning, looked at these perfections and these imperfections, tried to discern order, and they said, look, it's got to be a design. It can't be accidental. If you walk into a room and you see a table, you infer somebody built the table. If you walk into a world and you see this incredible combination of numbers that seem to work out, people infer a designer. Pythagoras worked on the ratio of where you fret a string to the change in tone, and believed that music and scales were inherent in creation, as were numbers. This is what the old theologians call the argument from design. But the design isn't perfect. The numbers don't all round out. We don't have 10 months of 30 days. We have to put in fudge factors and incalculables and look at all of the things in life that leave us unsatisfied but demand our attention. And the thing that demands our attention the most, I think, right now from where I'm coming from, is time. people, when they were trying to figure out the calendars and didn't calculate the months perfectly before we had discovered the concept of leap year, the seasons started to slide. And there had to be a change from the Julian to the Gregorian calendar, and 10 days, 10 times a leap day had to be subtracted, and people rioted. Because when they changed the calendar and those 10 days were removed, they thought 10 days had been taken from their lives and burned and thrown away, and that was the calendar of their lives. That when the Bible says, you know, help us number our days, they thought, well, I have so many days and you just took 10 of them away. Oh my God, this is terrible. Well, when the Bible says number our days that we may get us a heart of wisdom, I think what it means, with some modesty, is make them count. Not count the days, but make the days and the hours count. The 29th is a special day. It is what those who are now sobering up, maybe from Mardi Gras in New Orleans, call Lagniappe. Something that is just kind of thrown in, and we notice it because of its scarcity. And one of the questions that I've always had in my life was, I notice how good we are at certain times to each other as human beings, how we treat each other on our birthdays. When somebody's their birthday, you're king for the day. You're queen for the day. I'm going to grant you. I'm going to be extra nice. I'm not going to let the little things annoy me. I'll let them slide off, and it's your day. Dickens notes in the Christmas reading that I use almost every year that Christmas is that one season where humanity seems as if by agreement, by consent, to see the humanity in each other, to treat each other not as different creatures bound on separate journeys, but on fellow travelers to the grave. And the question that I've always had is, why can't we do this every day? Why can't we, in every sunset, see the beauty and not become inured to it? When I've asked people back in Vermont when we were bicycling through the extraordinary foliage, do you see it every year? Do you see it every time you drive by? Or does it just kind of fade away? And they said, well, we notice it sometimes. But a lot of the time, you just become used to it. We see that moon that gave us our math hanging low sometimes. It seems to be much bigger, low on the horizon, and I've heard 100 explanations and don't understand any of them. It's just bigger when it's on the horizon. I don't care what they say or what I look through in order to prove that it's exactly the same size when it's this big and then it's this big, which is the other argument from design. The solar eclipse is part of the argument from design. The moon is exactly the right size at exactly the right distance that sometimes its shadow completely covers the sun. If it were a couple hundred thousand miles closer, the sun would appear with a much larger corona. If it were further away, it would be a different shadow. If it were smaller and so forth. So they argue it can't be accidental. It doesn't make any difference to me if it's accidental or on purpose. When you look at it, it's marvelous. How do we miss the marvelous and the wonderful so often in our lives? And there's an answer. It's not simply a rhetorical question. And the answer is, and this is not going to be a rant against the evils of capitalism, it is that there's a relationship that most of us have between scarcity and value. If the streets were indeed paved with gold, nobody would be wearing gold jewelry. They just found a 400 billion carat diamond star. If you could drag it to Earth, Liz Taylor wouldn't want it. It would have no value. We would find something else because of its scarcity. It is the sense of finitude, the sense of scarcity, the sense of the special preciousness from time to time, which is Rick Mastin sings in Let It Be a Dance. If nothing's wrong, then nothing's right. If there is, without the darkness, there is no light. It is in accepting the cycles of time that we get the opportunity to stop and to notice and to know that each moment, each heartbeat is precious, is, even if understandable, is miraculous. That every day can remind us of being a 29th, of being a blue moon, two full moons in 1 month, though there is another definition. But we can see and appreciate the rare more often when we make a conscious effort to notice, to be there in the moment and to understand that every moment is a gift. And we have such opportunities to give each other the gift of our time and of our company, to give each other the gift of our hearts, to be held, to be treasured, to be hurt, to be vulnerable, because that is where intimacy comes from. That is where a sense of connection to each other and to life, life past, and life future comes from. I would not escape my tears. I'm comforted by them. I would not trade the time and the vulnerability. They are human. I'm not very used to being aware when my thinking is unclear. My wife tells me I should be used to having my thinking be unclear, but I'm not used to being aware of it. When I was up in Northern California as Mom was dying, I was aware of my incompetence. I was aware of how much I needed Helene to be with me, how much I needed to be held and to be hugged, that I couldn't trust all of my own thoughts and all of my own instincts. I needed other people to balance me and to keep me, if not sane, at least within the realms of okayness. I knew I wasn't okay, and I was okay with that. The questions that we have in terms of grief or celebration isn't, when you ask how is someone doing, terrible can be the appropriate and the right answer. And terrible can be okay. This is not the right meaning and interpretation of this, so I actually understand this. One of the things that always struck me in Camus' The Stranger is that it opens with Meursault saying, my mother died yesterday, or maybe it was today. And this is given as evidence for what an unfeeling person he is. I want to tell you that even though that is what the book meant, I believe, I was outside of time. Between Wednesday when I got the phone call and went and came back on Thursday night and making the arrangements on Friday, and I had no idea what time it was, what day it was. I had no clarity of place and location. And that's what happens when there are connections that are severed and we have to move people from one place in our lives and in our hearts to another place. Love doesn't go away. Memories don't go away. We don't get over. We get through. But the reason that I came here today is because I know, not simply professionally, but personally, that we don't get through it without each other. And I thank all of you, and it is a joy to be with you in this time for me and in all those times of joy and of sorrow with and for you, and being together makes a tremendous difference in our lives and in the lives that we take out to a larger world.